So I'm Julia Prentice. I'm with the Healthcare Financing and Economics Group with the Boston VA Healthcare System, which is essentially a group of health economics, and also Boston University School of Public Health. So we're going to talk about the effect of waiting for primary care on diabetes disease management today. And for a long time, policymakers have worried about how long individuals are waiting for healthcare, how many days between an appointment is requested and when the appointment is actually scheduled. Not getting an appointment soon enough is a main reason for delaying or foregoing healthcare altogether in survey data. And the Institute of Medicine in their quality of care report identified decreasing how long patients are waiting as one of six ways to improve the quality of healthcare in America. So the reason the policymakers worry about wait times for care is because it's hypothesized that delays in diagnosis and treatment are going to adversely affect your health. It's very hard to test this hypothesis because there's not a lot of good data out there on how long individuals actually wait. The exception is the VA, which has been monitoring how long individuals wait for their care for over a decade, and they make the data available to researchers. So a couple studies have taken veterans who have visited a geriatric clinic, and these clinics are specifically focused on conditions of aging, and they've looked at how long these individuals are waiting for healthcare and connected it to health outcomes. They find that longer waits increase both the risk of mortality for these patients and also the risk of preventable hospitalization, or the hospitalizations that ARC has defined as being preventable if you get high-quality, timely outpatient care. So this was a good start to begin to answer the question of whether or not wait times actually do compromise health, but it was on a very frail, elderly, vulnerable population who suffered from a wide variety of clinical conditions, and the question remained as to whether or not the relationship would hold up with a more homogeneous group. So we decided to look at the effect of wait times on diabetes, which is a very common chronic condition. It is well established that good, high-quality, timely outpatient care for diabetes can prevent complications, and you monitor various things such as blood glucose levels, regular blood pressure readings, cholesterol tests, foot and eye exams, with the hope of preventing more serious cardiovascular outcomes, mortality, and amputations. So our research objective is to examine the effect of waiting for outpatient care on health outcomes, and we hypothesize that longer waits are going to adversely affect health. Our study population was veterans that were diagnosed with diabetes before 2001. And for risk adjustment purposes, we want complete utilization data, so we also required that they were Medicare eligible. And we also wanted a population that was going to be adversely affected by changes in the wait times at the VA. So we required that the population had to visit the VA for all of their outpatient care during the baseline year. So our main independent variable of interest is wait times. And when you start doing this research, it's very tempting to use an individual level wait time. How long did patient X wait for their appointment, and what was their health outcome down the road? Fortunately, you can't do this because of medical triage issues. When patients contact their providers, providers figure out which patients are in the poorest health, and they get those patients in fastest. So our previous research has shown that it appears that shorter waits are actually causing poorer health. To get around this, we developed an exogenous measure of wait time, which is at the facility level and independent of individual health status. It's essentially a weighted average of waits for next available appointment in primary care, and we only took waits for new patients because it has been shown that new patients want to get in and see their doctor as soon as possible. So you can think about this wait time as basically an overall measure of congestion at the different VA facilities. All right, so the first model I'm going to talk about is for the long-term outcome model, which is stratified by age groups, five-year age groups. It's a logistic regression. And we predicted a variety of health outcomes, including mortality, heart attack, stroke, and preventable hospitalization. And again, our main independent variable of interest is this facility-level primary care wait time. And we focused it on primary care because 80% of visits for diabetes in the VA actually occur at primary care doctors. A key part of our study design is that we included dummy variables for each VA facility, and this controls for two potential sources of bias that may be confounding the relationship between waiting for care and health outcomes. It controls for case mix differences between facilities as well as for differences in facility quality. So we also include standard risk adjusters for prior individual health status, a number of comorbidities, both physical comorbidities and mental comorbidities, and a diabetes severity index to control for severity of diabetes. So fourth, we find that if the, for veterans aged less than 70, there was no relationship between longer waits for care and health outcomes. However, for veterans aged 70 or more, you begin to see these a positive relationship. So for veterans aged 70 to 74, they have a significantly increased risk of experiencing a stroke when wait times at their VA are 10 days longer compared to when their wait times are 10 days shorter. There's also a significant relationship for heart attack for those who are 75 to 79 years old, and a significant relationship for mortality and preventable hospitalization for those who are over 80 years old. Okay, now we're going to switch gears to the A1C model, where we predict blood glucose. And here we're hypothesizing that long waits are going to compromise the ongoing management of A1C, because if you're constantly visiting a VA facility that's more congested, you may not be able to get in on a regular basis to get your A1C checked. Our dependent variable then is A1C in a six-month period, which at the time of the study, guidelines suggested that the diabetic patients needed to have their A1C levels checked at least twice a year. Again, we include this facility level wait time, and in these models, we ended up dichotomizing it into greater than 32.5 days or more versus less than or equal to 32.5 days, and we included the standard risk adjusters that we use in the long-term outcome model. And again, we see this positive relationship between longer waits and higher A1C levels. On the average, the A1C level increases by 0.14 more for veterans when their facilities have waits longer than 32 and a half days compared to when their facilities have waits of 32.5 days or less. And this actually gets bigger as for those individuals who are in the poorest control at baseline. So that number increases to about 0.18 for those who have the poorest A1C control at baseline. So those results are clinically significant, but are they really, they're statistically significant, but are they clinically significant? So I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about quality improvement programs, which you're well aware of, but there's several quality improvement programs that are multifaceted approaches that are aimed at decreasing A1C levels. They might target patients, such as patient education. They might target clinicians, such as performance measures, or they may even change how healthcare system is delivered, such as case management programs that rely on the nurses or pharmacists to monitor the blood glucose and adjust the medication. The most successful of those programs decrease the A1C level by 0.5. So the effect we're seeing from wait time is about a third of the effect that we're seeing for these more multifaceted component quality improvement programs. And it suggests that adding timely access to care as a component of future quality improvement programs may help those programs further decrease A1C levels. So in conclusion, we are finding that long wait times do continually to compromise chronic disease management. The effect is largest on your most vulnerable elderly populations, or those whose chronic disease is in the poorest control to start with. But we do find a relationship on a variety of outcomes, both long-term, such as mortality, and short-term, such as A1C levels. And it raises the question of what does that mean for policy? Historically, in the United States, demand and supply for healthcare has been balanced by the ability to pay, where the uninsured or the underinsured cannot get services because they cannot afford this. However, the recent passage of health reform is probably going to change this, because we just expanded insurance coverage to a large population of uninsured individuals, and that's going to increase demand. So for all the benefits of healthcare reform, if we also do not increase supply at the same time, waiting times are going to probably increase for all patient populations. If that occurs, policymakers may want to start thinking about which patient populations really deserve priority access and may suffer the poorest health outcomes for vulnerable because they're more vulnerable. And clearly more research is needed on that to figure out who should get in first. And that would be it.
Okay, we have time for some questions.
That one. Sorry.
What was your first model? The second model was
The first model was long-term outcomes. It was logistic regression predicting mortality, stroke, heart attack, and preventable hospitalization. Those were all different models.
I had a question for you.
Yes.
So in your first model, you also controlled for facility.
Yes.
And I was wondering to what degree the facility may already account for the wait times.
Yes.
How did you resolve that?
This is why we include facility fixed effects, because we do know that facility quality is very different among different VA facilities. So you can imagine VA facilities that have poor management may also have poor health outcomes, and that doesn't have anything to do with wait times. So statistically, the inclusion of facility fixed effects controls for those permanent differences in facility quality and isolates the relationship between wait times and health outcomes. So that was a statistical fix.
Did you check to see whether wait times differed between the two facilities?
Yes, and this is another key methodological thing that I skipped over is because of time, and is that we're not actually comparing like the Boston VA to the Denver VA. We're comparing changes in wait times at the Boston VA in January to the Boston VA in February. So each individual is actually their control. They serve as their own control. So does that
make sense?
And I, for time, I did not get into that.
I really appreciate that you talked about the problem of supply with hospitals. Not enough people are talking about it, and I have a family medicine physician, and supply is a big problem, not only in our clinic in terms of wait times, because I work at that community, but also like in the foreseeable future. And I think when we start talking about health reform, I think getting insurance for everyone, I mean, I'm really looking here. But we really have to start talking about increasing supply for primary care. I mean, we live in a country where 70% of our providers are specialists. We couldn't be here.
Right. Exactly. And the VA is a sort of strange silo, right? Because it's a nationalized healthcare system in the US, which is very odd. And they have been struggling with wait times for over a decade. They have tried, they've implemented advanced clinic access or open scheduling. There have been improvements, but the bottom line is that there's still an imbalance between supply and demand, and resources are limited. And health reform is probably going to affect other patient populations.
And I guess I'm sort of thinking, if I were the head of the VA or listening to your study,
yeah, they don't.
I would wonder, what am I going to do aside from triaging? I mean, she sort of tried to control them. She said they already tried to do, triaging is a good solution to that.
Yes, and this is, it politically gets tricky, right? Because these poor VA managers and policymakers are called up to Congress on the Hill every year or whatever, and they have to say, we are serving every veteran that walks through our door. That's what they're trying to get to. However, we know that's not the case. And currently, the policy is that if you have a service-connected disability, you're supposed to get priority access. Now, there's good political reasons for that policy, and we're not saying that you should change the policy. And I should disclose here that none of the views represented here are of the Department of Veterans Affairs. These are our own views. But so we are trying to gently push them to start thinking beyond service-connected disability to chronic diseases or stratifying it on groups that need more that are more vulnerable. But we're not getting very far yet.
Thank you very much.